Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today is the recipient of awards and fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Academy of American Poets, and the Poetry Society of America. Brenda Hillman is an activist, writer, and teacher at St. Mary's College in Moraga, California. She has published 9 collections of poetry, including Practical Water, winner of the Los Angeles Times Book Award for Poetry. Her work Loose Sugar was a finalist for a National Book Critics Circle Award, Bright Existence was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize, and her latest book of poetry, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire, was nominated for a National Book Award. It concludes a 4-book series exploring earth, air, water, and fire. Brenda Hillman, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, the title of your latest book, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire. How do you explain that to people, that title?
Well, you know, on a very straightforward level, it is a group of poems that concern themselves with the seasons. And so Works, of course, has the sort of double play on working, being about work, but also about, you know, sort of a more general term for writings about the seasons. And, of course, letters can be either letters to people or letters in words. And I wanted to get a lot of double play on that title. You may have noticed, Nancy, a lot of the poems have 6-word titles. So that is also a 6-word title.
So, the very title of your book.
Yes. So,
well, I know that one of our local superstar poets, Troy Jollimore, is a fan of yours, and so I asked him what he liked about your poetry, and he said, her sense of humor and her playfulness with language, her social environmental awareness, and her compassion and openness to spiritual experiences and experiences of beauty in the context of everyday life. And so that's what Troy Jollimore said about your poetry.
Thank you, Troy.
That was very nice. Now, he says he likes your sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a poem that illustrates your sense of humor.
Oh, well,
does one come to mind?
Well, I can read one that has to do with my mother and her practice of talking to plants. I grew up with a mother who had a very deep connection to living and growing things. So this has some of the kind of lightness of that.
Well, some of us talk to plants, and we didn't even think that's something because we take our plants seriously.
Yes, indeed, and it is. In fact, I'd say this poem has wit in the middle because it's a little bit lighthearted about the cycles of life.
Yeah, why don't you read us that one?
So, the practice of talking to plants. Mama and I, we talk to plants, for we are short girls close to the ground, and speech is the golden miracle. I learn to write while she says honey, making a fire pouch in the Y, to a speckled banana whose existence is energy broth. To limp chrysanthemums, she says, come on, and drops a bare aspirin in. I curve our letters near a choya after it lent some needles to my leg.
You might mention that's a cactus.
Yes, indeed. A cactus. We're not good relaxers, childhood and I. We suffer a leafy need while God is a missing hypotenuse. Will not a dreaded dandelion meet before her voice arrives at low violets. In summer, when spicy seeds escape so fine a pepper tree to make sachet for the lingerie drawer, we speak to spices they put on Jesus, those poor bright spices staring in the dark. He hath numbered every hair on your head, she said, meaning she hath numbered the hairs. When we are out with our strangeness in the west, she in her desert, I on a mountain, crouching near Lilium Parvium, with the same amount of frail our mother feels, it will be quiet for a while, but syllables are there. Inside, a leaf, a syllable, inside a syllable, a door.
This is Brenda Hillman, and she's reading one of her poems from her most recent collection, The Practice of Talking to Plants. Now, people can hear you reading the poem. What they can't see is the way you end this poem is rather typical printed. Now, this is something the eye has to see, but explain to listeners how you end the poem after the word door.
So this actually came up in the little session I just had at Butte College with the students there. A young woman asked, why do you end so many poems with dashes or with open marks or no punctuation at all?
Yeah, there's no period at the end of
there's
that
no
sentence.
Period. Well, of course, it's a bit of a it leaves the poem open. And I like to think sometimes that poems are not just works in themselves, but they're also a piece of a conversation that's ongoing. So by leaving the poem open, by not closing it off, I leave the option for the conversation going on, even though it's a unit in itself. So, and I think dashes are beautiful. And of course, my great, great older sister, Emily Dickinson, used a lot of dashes, and we.
So it's rather nod to Emily Dickinson.
It calls her up. Yes.
Well, one of the lines in this poem: "We're not good relaxers, childhood and I." What do you mean by that?
Well, it's sort of a way of not. First of all, using the word we instead of I, you think sometimes that your childhood is more than just yourself. It's a number of experiences. It's multiple selves. And, I was an intense child. I would say I wasn't really a hang loose type of child. So it's a little bit of a reference to the intensity of childhood if you're if you're a creative child and kind of imagining spirits and everything. I grew up in the Tucson desert, and I had a sort of deep, intense relationship to that spirit world that I thought of in childhood, where that things were inhabited, and I loved childhood in that way, but it was not relaxing.
Well, there's a line in one of your other poems: Childhood is certainly odd.
Yes.
And the title of that poem is "The Elements Are Mixed in Childhood."
Yes.
And below that, you say an essay in rhyme, and that's on page 55 in your collection. Might mention again, the collection is Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire. And this is a prose piece. And in it, later down in the last paragraph, you say, childhood is certainly odd. And even the beginning of this poem is very intriguing. Why don't you read some of that poem for us?
Yes, this is called "The Elements Are Mixed in Childhood, an Essay in Rhyme." Excuse me. So this poem I chose the prose poem form for it because I wanted to make a contrast between a kind of intense interior rhyme, which I was using in the poem, and, something that looks like just normal prose, which daily life sometimes does.
And you give a clue under "The Elements Are Mixed in Childhood," and parentheses, "An Essay in Rhyme." And so you're looking, okay, this looks to my eye like prose, but you give us a clue. You say it's an essay in rhyme.
Yeah. So it's a little rhymed essay. So the elements are mixed in childhood. Our mother was baptized on a kerosene box. Our father was baptized in a creek. And we were baptized in a plaster pool while turquoise ripples played around our feet and desert air poofed up to make the long black robe a nylon buffalo. "It makes your underpants wet," said our brother. "It's strange to be on fire with sins. This is how the past begins. This is the year of the missile crisis. It is the year of Barbie and Ken. Mama studies ridges in her gloves. The congregation sings a hymn while out in the desert the worm grows tall and nature is a mixed-up miracle. We strain to see the cross behind our head. That's how Baptists like it. The invisible is physical. That's the way it is," says Walter Concrete in the news. "Talking flames get rid of hell. In college, we'll read Emerson. In college, we'll meet Robert Duncan dressed like a bat, but we don't know that. Go ahead," says Curly Q. "The mind is what you need to make up, and why should a child be dressed like a bat, wings flapping up to her sides like that? Bat, at. The congregation sings a hymn. They hold the stanzas up, up, up. Mama studies riches in her gloves. She is our eternal love. Childhood certainly is odd. Everything is everything. Earth, air, beauty, fire, wood, water, love, blood. Time is what you need to mix up, and what is anything not God? The choir circles the circles. They're singing to rehearse for glory. Fiery stanzas fill our head. That's why words are round in every story. That's why we love music and talk to the dead.
And following that word did is a
dash.
And this is Brenda Hillman. She's reading one of the poems from her collection, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire. And the title of that poem was The Elements Are Mixed in Childhood. And I mentioned that it ends with a dash, which you have explained. But now you start that poem by saying, our mother was baptized on a kerosene box. And because you have said you grew up in the desert and your parents were Baptist, so we're beginning to wonder, this must be have truth in it, actual fact from your childhood?
Yes. Well, this is one of those poems, you know, I like to mix lots of different kinds of realities in my poems, because I think that's how our minds work. We mix dream and we mix the unconscious with the conscious and memory and future. And I asked my parents at one point, I was working on the previous book, Practical Water, and this book was actually going to go in that book. This poem was going to go in that book, but it didn't get finished in time. And I asked my parents at one point, you know, where could you remember being baptized? Where were you baptized? And my dad grew up in Mississippi, in the backwoods of Mississippi, and my mother grew up in Brazil. She was, you know, the daughter and granddaughter and great-granddaughter of missionaries. And she was baptized down there. And I said, do you remember Mama, where you were baptized? And she said, yes. And she told me the name of the river. And I said, what do you think you were probably standing on? And she said, oh, it was a box. It was probably a kerosene box. So of course I turned it into, okay, an assertion.
Well, I remember one thing that I did read when you were talking about living in Brazil.
Yeah.
And so you yourself lived in Brazil for a while.
I did, yes, for a couple of years. My dad worked for the government, and we were down there for a couple of years in the 50s, early 50s.
But most of your images here, a lot of them, do relate to the desert. Yes. And you mentioned cactus in a previous poem, a kind of cactus. And
yes.
So these are images that relate to the desert. But now you have a poem called Eco-Poetics Manifesto, A Draft for Angie. And that's on page 29 in your book. Eco-poetics, now that's not a word most of us are familiar with. What do you mean by eco-poetics?
Well, if you take it apart, you probably are familiar with it, because we all know what ecology is. It's the study of, you know, a regional consciousness of the environment. And poetics is the study of poetry and how, you know, theories of poetry, how poetry gets put together.
But these two are often separate fields.
Yes, they are.
In most people's minds, there's ecology over here and there's poetry over there.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm going to teach a class at St. Mary's, and I called it ecological poetry so people wouldn't have to worry about the word. But it's a common word now in poetry and kind of how to say it, a kind of progressive poetry that's thinking about the earth in terms of not a sort of very sentimental or easy, unquestioning idea that nature is really good and humans are really, you know, iffy. But the idea about relationship between the things that are happening to earth that are not so good, you know. So it's a poetics that comes out of a more environmental consciousness, an idea that there's the connection between what we do as humans and what's happening to Earth. And so there's lots of very good contemporary poetry being written in a very questioning ecological consciousness. And new forms are being invented to write this poetry. So a lot of my poetry comes out of this idea that, you know, some that this is, my friend Jonathan Skinner talks about the ecology as a site for investigation for poetry. And I would recommend, there are two really great anthologies. One is called The Arcadia Project and one is called The Ego Poetry Anthology. So they're two really great new anthologies that are just out.
Well, why don't you read us some of Eco-Poetics Manifesto,
sure.
A draft for Angie.
Okay, and this is a mini-festo instead of a manifesto. You know, poets, a lot of poets write, oh, these sort of pompous statements about their, but this, I wanted to put everything I think about poetry on one page. And so I'll read maybe a couple of these points, and then the readers can read the rest. So at times, a poem might enact qualities brought from romantic poetry through Baudelaire to modernism and beyond, freedom of form, expressivity, and content, taking these to a radical intensity with uncertainty, complexity, contradiction. Such a poem employs knowledge from diverse disciplines, including scientific vocabularies, but does not privilege only the human. Research includes rural and urban wilds, as well as knowledge from all cultures. Creative forms bring together earth and spirit, rejecting no sources, including the personal. That's the first two, and then this is the last one. And though powerless to halt the destruction of bioregions, the poem can be brought away from the computer. The poet can accompany acts of resistance so the planet won't die of the human.
So the planet won't die of the human.
Yeah, yeah. I have a very solemn and fearful approach to some of this devastation in this book. It's you know, it's a book in which I try to get a lot of the wit and deep spiritual connectedness I feel toward non-human nature and our forms. But I feel very frightened. As an activist and as a writer and as a parent and a grandparent and a teacher, about the unconsciousness with which we are dealing with our environments. And so I did want to put the remark out that I don't think poetry has power in the same way that activism does. You know, you need both. You need art. And you need action in the different kind of way. So that's why that last little remark.
My guest is Brenda Hillman, and she's been reading poems from her latest collection, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire, and this was nominated for a National Book Award. Now, you mentioned this activism, and some of what you write, you mentioned your background with your mother that came from reality, and then there sometimes you have a photograph. So when you read the poem, you think, well, she was really there. Here's a picture. And I'm thinking of the one that you call Report on Visiting the District Office. And this one is on page 42. It starts with, what is poetry for? And you say, truth is, I don't know. But included in this, you have a photograph of the people that you refer to in the poem. So this must have really happened.
Yes, it did. The Jonathan Skinner, the poet that I just mentioned, suggested to a number of people in the eco poetry community that we visit our district offices, our congressional offices, and take them either information or poetry. And so a friend of mine, Janet Wheel, who's an activist and poet, and we went to visit our congressional office and we took poetry.
Yeah, read this one.
Okay. Report on visiting the district office. Who is poetry for? Truth is, I don't know. The folks at tailgate parties before the game in their lawn chairs, are they dying every day for lack of what is found there? It's been proposed that we take poems about offshore drilling to congressional staff. My district is shaped like a bouncing blue amoeba. Ironic to drive 20 miles to protest oil drilling in a dreamily driving to the suburbs depression. Outside the atrium, a fountain with ridges, climbing the stairs with Janet and taking the poems like contraband across the threshold. M, the district director, sits with us. She tells about bills the congressman will put forth. She is kind and listens carefully while we read to her at a huge table, three women, two poems. Two flags hang patiently, listening from their poles. I am nervous and want not to sweat and cry in official places, to be calm and believe in the system as M does. But the system makes us crazy. We've become harpies, harridans, banshees, devils moaning at gas pumps. In the Oresteia, underground furies are paid off by the rational sky gods. Let's be nice now. I want my representative to shriek in Congress, not be polite. Here we are in his office, three women, two poems. I am grateful for their company. We are powerless to save the pelicans and manatees. Big oil has bought everything but not my armpits, which are sweating in solidarity with the commons before the 18th century enclosure acts. Sensible limits to use. Oceans could be the commons, as could volcanoes and the moon. Outside, early spring and light rain. Up the Devil Mountain, quail and brush rabbits scurry. Janet and I hold our arms out. Calendula deodorant smell mixes with the air and the hurry.
This is Brenda Hillman reading Report on Visiting the District Office. And that poem also, after the word hurry, is a dash. But that is a humorous image, moaning as we pump gas.
Yeah.
That poem, moaning at the gas pump.
Yeah.
So this poem is about something you actually did, apparently, because there's the photograph in the middle of your prose poem.
Yes.
This photograph of M and you and Janet.
Yeah.
That takes place. Now, so even within this rather serious topic, you have the humor.
Yeah.
And you have a poem in your book about squirrels. And this is on page 66.
Yes.
And what did you have to say about squirrels, Brenda?
Well, you know, at St. Mary's, well, everywhere in California and the Bay Area, certainly, we have particularly active squirrels.
Well, just imagine here where all their nuts are.
Right, exactly.
I mean, Chico has so many nuts.
Squirrel
that we have,
capital of the world.
Absolutely.
Well, someone made a remark to me one day at work, and I think she was not being... You know, she was trying to be comforting. But anyway, I thought I would just write a little poem about it because I was feeling particularly grouchy. So imitating a squirrel at my job. When I get a little speedy at work and part of the brain says, calm down, I hear near our ear in the outside tree, speckle, 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 You gonna tell a squirrel that? Calm down and try to be cheerful. Try to be ch-ch, try to be ch-ch, try to be ch-ch-ch-ch, try to be e-e-e, try to be ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, try to be ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch- You gonna tell a fasten the skull till it shapes the cone and tornado drops its squirrel that? You gonna tell the when it nut up stands like Napoleon, paw 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 try to be calm and cheerful, all cute, gray, fast, and craving colored.
This is Brenda Hillman. You thought you were hearing a squirrel. And I'll have to admit, when I read this poem, I read it out loud, and I sounded like that. I did. I felt kind of funny doing it, but I felt that was one you had to read out loud.
Right, indeed.
So this is from her collection, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire, which was nominated for a National Book Award. And you do have this humor that you work into your poems, but then you have a serious poem, Between Souls and the Meteors. And what is that poem about?
Well, a lot of the poems are very, you know, are very, as I say, I try to go to very deep places. And this calls up a lot of moments in autumn when you feel as if the kind of mystery of existence is closing in, you know, and you're wanting to be interior. Because I think autumn sometimes makes you want to, you know, kind of withdraw into your soul.
Well, I can feel that change when the seasons change. I feel that.
Yeah, that you want to go inside yourself and be meditative and go into the deep place. And it came from a number of things, watching that moment in October. And then also it refers to, some losses that we had as a family. Between the souls and the meteors. The ancestors turn in the sycamore, leaves like hunched over squirrels. A freeze might take the lemon tree. That thing of dozing over a book, the writer just gunpowder now. Miles up, Sparks dragged through meteors. Miles down, creatures eat rock mixed with fire. Someone prays for you even if you don't like it. Our suicides sleep in the mind of a word. We want our mother not to have suffered. Moonbeams snake where the tan oak shivers. We want our father not to have suffered, or the three cats sprinkled with western dawn. The little baby sleeps on his side, his dream face turned to the woods. A fox sleeps with its mouth of color, and the O in your head, the damaged vowel where the skin rises to meet the wound. What does that spell? I don't know, since it got to go on living. But seems like basically it's kind of a combination. Everything means everything, plus there is no hidden meaning.
This is Brenda Hillman reading from her collection of poems, Seasonal Works with Letters on Fire. There is another poem where you give new meaning to out of order. And that was the poem where you give the dates of a person, PMH, who was apparently died at 37. Mm. And one of the lines in that poem is, it's out of order that a son should go first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we always feel when somebody dies
yes.
before their parent does. We feel that's out of order.
That's right. Yeah. This poem that I just read refers to, mm-hmm. family suicides. And I think, about how we integrate loss into families and that being an important function of poetry, I think, to speak mm-hmm. to those the kind of mystery that is not easily explained, just mm-hmm. early loss of young people, loss by suicide, loss by divorce, and that poetry meets us in that place of where the uneasy answer is mm-hmm. Is sometimes just about, speaking to the beauty of the season or the beauty of a process, of going through a process, whether it's easy or not,
You have a poem where you refer to, and the person is referred to as father, and so I'm guessing maybe this was your father. The poem starts, the title of it is Till It Finishes What It Does. It starts with, where is the meaning, the old man asked. The night nurse had put on his little frowning socks. He lay on his life bed. And you mentioned when all the visitors left the room, the tiny valve of the pig beat inside our father's heart. And so that was actually the case for
you? Yes, my father had a triple bypass, and he had a valve replacement at almost 90. And he said to me, write a poem about this, babe. And I said, Dad, give me the first line. And he said, what is the meaning of all this? So I said, I'll write it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So
that first line of this poem
was provided by him.
That's wonderful. It's been such a pleasure talking to you about your new collection of poems.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope your readers will keep, listeners will keep poetry in their lives.
You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Wiegman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.